Good morning. Today, you are finally going to discover how AI works. This lesson and the next one are the most important lesson of the course. Most of the exam will be about them, as you are going to see neural networks, deep learning, generative AI, and large language models. Know your enemy, they say. Are you ready to change your vision of the world forever? By now, you know that AI is more than a simple revolution. It is more like a supersonic tsunami. Last week, for example, software companies such as Microsoft and Duolingo lost more than $1 trillion in the stock market because AI agents are replacing them. The final software, the final operating system, is you talking to your AI agent and your agent doing everything in your stead. That's the natural evolution of software. You already know that in Italy, we do not have any smart destination because we are not very good at networking. Companies and institutions do not talk to each other very often. AI will force them to collaborate, if they want to survive, at least, from a working point of view. People who can't collaborate with others will find it very difficult to find a job in future. Now, the Pentagon is at war with the AI companies because they don't want to provide the U.S. military the tools to spy all their citizens and to kill people with drones without any human supervision. Every civilization reaches a moment when the traditional rules stop working. We are living through this moment. The reason of the incredible success of AI is that we have somewhat simulated the left hemisphere of the brain. In a weird way, as we are going to see, but it works, as AI has most of the skills that our left hemisphere has. Language skill, reasoning skills, logic skill, mathematics skills, and spatial skills. The right hemisphere, instead, cannot be easily simulated by AI, as it is associated to emotions and feelings that are still a mystery. Neurophysics studied them for the last 70 years to understand how they are generated, but didn't find any clue. This is a good news because it means we won't be able to build an AI that is able to feel any soon. Not just simulate feelings, but feels itself. An AI that feels would be a big problem because it would become a competitor of our species, a super intelligent, immortal species that would quickly find a way to replace us.
Well, it all began a couple of centuries ago, when they discovered that human neurons, and also animal neurons, behave like conductors of electricity. They let pass small electrical currents with an intensity of a few milliamperes, which is thousands of times weaker than any light bulb. They also discovered that each neuron consists of a central body from which many branches that spread out that are called dendrites. There is also a branch longer than the others that is called axon, which on average is 1 centimeter long, but some axons are even up to 10 centimeters long. Imagine of having many threads long like this inside your head. Our brain is not just gray matter, as they call it. No, it is made by a web of billions of organic threads that connects different parts of the brain. They are just too thin to see. At the end of the axon, there are other branches, and at the end of that branches, there are other neurons, thousands of neurons. But they never touch the branches. There is a very small empty space that separates two neurons from each other, of a few nanometers. This empty space is called synapses, and it is here that all our memories are stored. All what we learn during life is not stored inside neurons, because neurons cannot evolve during life. They cannot move their dendrites or connect to other neurons. They are frozen forever in the same shape, and new ones cannot form. So how can we learn new things if neurons cannot change in time? There is only one area of the brain that is able to change its properties over time. It is the synapses. When an electric current reaches one of the two sides of the synapse, it is converted in a chemical signal in the form of hundreds of molecules of neurotransmitters as glutamate, serotonin or dopamine, acetylcholine, and many others depending on the type of synapse are released from the terminal part of the axon. They cross the empty space of the synapse, and when they reach their destination, they bind to some very large proteins called receptors that are on the membrane of the dendrite and have the shape of a channel, a tube that let molecules enter inside the neuron. It is usually closed, but when a neurotransmitter finds a receptor, it opens it like a key. Neurotransmitters are too big to enter the channel, but the space between neurons is full of smaller molecules, even atoms like those of sodium or potassium, that take advantage that the channel is open to the neuron. Sodium and potassium are electrically charged. They are ions that are positively charged with one proton more than the number of electrons, so they generate a new electric current in the neuron with a different intensity than that of the axon. It can be higher or lower than before. It is usually different strength.
This new current propagates in the second neuron and joins all the other electrical currents that come from the other dendrites. If the overall current exceeds a certain threshold, which varies from neuron to neuron, the axon lets it pass and reach the synapses of all the other neurons at the end of the axon. Consider that each neuron contacts on average of 1,000 other neurons thanks to the synapses. Each of us has about 100 billion neurons. This means if we multiply by 1,000, we also have 100 trillion synapses. Each one is able to modify the amount of electricity from one neuron to the next. If the synapses is activated frequently, or by large amounts of electricity, the second neurons start producing more receptors that are able to intercept more neurotransmitters, so more positive ions enter the neuron, and a stronger current is generated. This is an ability that the cell has during all his life, so the strength of a synapses can change several times during our life, and this is exactly the mechanism we need in order to learn and memorize new things. This is what is called synaptic plasticity. People that take drugs greatly increase the production of the neurotransmitter dopamine that generate very strong electrical currents that gives a pleasant sensation. But then their brain reacts to this massive production of electricity by decreasing the number of receptors to dopamine instead of increasing them. So also the feeling that the drug gives decreases since the intensity of the electrical currents decreases. That's why drugs give addiction, because it is necessary to take them in increasingly larger doses to have the same effect as before. So drugs lead to permanent alteration of the synapses.
People who suffer from Alzheimer's disease lose their memory not because neurons dies, neurons are almost immortal, but they can lose their dendrites, so they do form synapses anymore, and they are disconnected from the neural network. The number of synapses decreases, and therefore also our ability to remember and learn. Luckily, we do not store information in specific places as our computers do, but through all the neural network. This is one of the most difficult things to understand of neural networks. For example, your name is not stored in a single synapse. If not, losing that synapsis would also make you forget your own name. No, this information is spread through all the network. Each time you think at your own name, there are millions of neurons that are activated by an electric current that follows a certain pattern, and that pattern of activation represents your name. Even if some synapses along the pattern stop working, the pattern doesn't change and your name is still the same. You usually don't wake up thinking that your name has changed, isn't it? Also, the information about your friend name is stored together with the info of his or her face and of the emotions you associate with your friend and cannot be separated. Now, how do you simulate biological neurons with an algorithm? Well, you just represent each neuron with a point or a circle, as shown in the slides, with an arrow that represents the intensity of the electric current of the axon. The intensity of the current in the new neuron, after the synapsis, can be written as the previous intensity multiplied by a weight, that is a number, W, that we call parameter. W only depends on its synapses and is the only variable that is able to change over time. When you hear that the last version of ChatGPT has 2 trillion parameters, it is exactly these numbers W that they are referring to. Also, the other dendrites of the neuron have their own different weights, W1, W2, etc., and their own different intensities, X1, X2, etc. The final current that reaches the central body of the neuron is given by the sum of the currents that arrive at each of its dendrites. Then we add a constant number that we call B to indicate the current inside the neuron when no other currents are passing through it coming from its dendrites. If this sum is above a certain threshold, the axon is activated and it lets the current pass through. The threshold in the biological brain usually corresponds to a few milliamperes, while in the case of artificial neurons, it is a function called an activation function, used to normalize the values of the currents to always work with small numbers, which is very convenient. The activation function also provides the artificial neural network a new important quality, that of being able to model also variables that are non-linear. That is to say, that are not a simple linear combination of the input values. We have seen how each neuron is modeled inside the neural network. Now we can see how all neurons are organized to form a network.
All artificial neural networks have an input layer of neurons and an output layer, in red, and one or more layers in between, called hidden layers. Artificial neurons are also called nodes. The input layer receives data, such as an image or a sentence entered by the user, as the prompt you write in ChatGPT. Then the data is processed by the hidden layers, and the output is written into the output layer, the following word of the sentence, another image, a sound. If you have four or more internal layers, the network is called a deep learning network. So the only difference between neural networks and a deep learning network is the number of internal layers. ChatGPT, for example, has 96 internal layers and 50,000 nodes per hidden layer. Each node is connected to all those of the previous level and to all those of the next level. There are no nodes connected to other nodes at two or more levels away, only to one. This is very different from our brain. A biological network, in fact, is much more complicated. Every neuron can be connected to any other neuron, even to itself, and there are no layers at all. Our brain does not employ activation functions and all other techniques described in this lesson and in the next one, such as backpropagation, embeddings, and the attention mechanism. That's why AI should be the acronym of alien intelligence. They wanted to reproduce human intelligence, but they ended up creating an alien one instead.
When you run the prompt of an LLM, for example, you take all the words of the prompt, insert them in the input layers, and forecast the following word of the sentence. This process is called forward propagation, or also inference, and is done with simple matrix multiplications between the parameters W and the values of the currents in each node. The result of the forward propagation is the new word or image to add at the end of the sequence. See the slides for an example of forward propagation. The values of the parameters W never change when you run a new prompt. Only the values of the currents inside the nodes change. How could the researchers identify the right values of the weights W? Through a method called backpropagation. They started giving random values to all the parameters W. Then you measure the difference, also called the loss function, between the output values and the true ones of the correct word or image. The difference is then propagated from right to left. That's why it is called backpropagation. This time, also the parameters W are calibrated. The idea is that the higher the difference, the more the parameters should be corrected. For example, a difference of 2 could be reduced by decreasing a bit a few parameters W, so the next time you run the forward regression, the difference won't be 2, but only 1. The algorithm increases the weights of the group of neurons that contribute to providing the correct answer and decreases the weights of the neurons that tend to move away from the correct answer. In this way, the correct answer is amplified. The same method is applied to the parameters of the previous hidden layers one by one until the first layer is reached. This process of optimizing the weights W is called model training or model calibration.
When you train a deep learning model, you find the best values of all the parameters W. The important thing to understand is that once you have trained the model once, the work is done. It may take weeks to train a model, but once done, you don't need to train the model again every time a user inserts a new prompt. Once the model has forecasted a word, you ask it to forecast the following one, and so on until the first book has been used to train the model. At the beginning, the model fails over and over, but in time, after training it over thousands of books, it becomes very, very good at forecasting the following word, as it has learned the structure of the language. This type of learning is called supervised learning, and it is similar to what parents do to their children to teach them to speak. They repeat many sentences until the child learns which words to put one after the other. However, the same large language models are also used to generate summaries, write emails, translate into other languages, write code, compose poetry and songs, and so on. All tasks very different from predicting the next word. How do they do it? It takes a child years to learn to speak, but when the child goes to the elementary school and his teacher tells him to summarize a story, it doesn't take him other 6 years to learn how to summarize a text, because he already learned the structure of the language. In the same way, a large language model is able to summarize any text after the researchers show it a few examples. This type of learning is called supervised learning, and it is similar to what parents do to their children to teach them to speak. They repeat many sentences until the child learns which words to put one after the other. However, the same large language models are also used to generate summaries, write emails, translate into other languages, write code, compose poetry and songs, and so on. All tasks very different from predicting the next word. How do they do it? It takes a child years to learn to speak, but when the child goes to the elementary school and his teacher tells him to summarize a story, it doesn't take him other 6 years to learn how to summarize a text, because he already learned the structure of the language. In the same way, a large language model is able to summarize any text after the researchers show it a few examples. This type of learning is called supervised learning, and it is similar to what parents do to their children to teach them to speak. They repeat many sentences until the child learns which words to put one after the other.
However, the same large language model is also used to generate summaries, write emails, translate into other languages, write code, compose poetry and songs, and so on. All tasks very different from predicting the next word. How do they do it? It takes a child years to learn to speak, but when the child goes to the elementary school and his teacher tells him to summarize a story, it doesn't take him other 6 years to learn how to summarize a text, because he already learned the structure of the language. All he needs are a few examples of summarized, and after that, he is able to summarize any text. In the same way, a large language model is able to summarize any text after the researchers show it a few examples. This property of the deep learning models to learn new tasks quickly is the first example of an emergent property of the model. Emergent properties are abilities that the researchers didn't introduce explicitly in the model. They just appeared by themselves once the model reached a certain complexity, a certain number of parameters.
You also need to give the model data, but of good quality if you want to train it well. In the same way as a child, how grows an environment rich in stimuli and information will become more intelligent than other children that grows alone, without a family to give them a proper education. For this reason, models are trained on huge datasets, basically all freely available information available on internet, not only textual data, but also the diversity of the data and its quality is very important. They remove repeated text, racist text, homophobic ones, pornographic material, dangerous info such as how to make poisons or bombs. You don't see it, but every time you type a promo, ChatGPT adds another invisible prompt before yours that says, "You are a friendly and helpful AI. Answer the following user question, and then insert your question."
Large language models allowed us to formulate a reasonable hypothesis to explain an age-old question: how did our articulated language arise?
How did we go from simple animal calls to complex syntax? Human language is no more than 100,000 years old, a time too short for natural evolution to develop a new brain region specific for language. Thus, our brain performed a brilliant act of neuronal recycling. It took its existing neural network, originally designed to predict the movement of objects in space, and applied it to word prediction. Many animals, in fact, including us, can easily predict the motion of objects. Nature often recycles organs and limbs. Wings, for example, were born to capture small prey, not to fly. Also, our ears were born as part of the bones of the jaw to chew food, and then moved laterally and were used to hear instead of eating. However, it was believed that the ability to speak was distinct from the ability to predict motion, until large language models demonstrated that intelligent speech could be constructed by simply predicting the next word in a sequence. The hard truth about our mind is that it isn't designed to perceive the world as it is, but to anticipate it well enough to increase its chances of survival. An animal that sees a predator may already be too late to escape. If it predicts its approach, however, it survives. If this hypothesis is correct, then why don't animals talk? They too, in fact, have a neural network able to forecast the movement of objects. Why didn't they use it to forecast the next word, as we did? Animals are born with all their synaptic parameters already calibrated by natural evolution, what we call instinct. A fawn can run within minutes of birth. Humans, on the other hand, are born immature. This characteristic is called neoteny. When we came down from the trees and went from four legs to two, the pelvic bones narrowed and the newborn's head could no longer pass through the birth canal. The only way for us to be born was to be born prematurely, about a couple of months earlier than normal. That is, we are born in the ninth month instead of the 11th. For this reason, when we are born, our synapses are not formed yet. Our parameters are not determined yet by natural evolution. Instead, they are trained by our environment, that is to say, by our parents, that not only teach us how to walk and run, but also how to speak.
In case of generative AI, there are other important differences with our brain, as we are going to see next week when we will focus on generative AI. Enough of theory for today.